Welcome back to How I Got Through It. Today, we're chatting with the CEO of Brambleberry, Anne-Marie. And if you haven't heard of Brambleberry, they're a global supply company that just entered the skincare game. In this conversation, Anne-Marie shares how managing your psychology is really the key, not only to building a business, but the key to everything in all aspects of your life. Let's get right into the conversation and welcome back to How I Got Through It. I should actually just start and I should welcome you, Anne-Marie. Thank you so much for being on the pod. I'm so happy to have this conversation with you. It's been a long time coming.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. I mean, we met like 8 years ago, a decade ago, some long time ago, multiple careers back for you. And I'm excited that we get to reconnect.
Yeah. So you asked why the podcast, why this time? I was working for HuffPost, and that was just kind of like a freelance writing position that I had there. And I used it in a way to be resourceful, I would say. When I first moved to New York, I thought, I love the underdog story. I would love to meet people that are kind of like-minded. And so I pitched myself to HuffPost and they were like, yeah, sure, have a column. So we met through a PR agency because you were at that time promoting your book. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Best day ever.
Yeah. So that's kind of how we initially met. But the through line for me at that time and still today was I love people's stories. I love hearing how they came through a hard thing, the nuances in between all of that. And so for me, I felt like this was just the natural next progression. So that's why this podcast.
That is amazing. I love that you followed your passions into something tangible that helps others.
Yeah.
Really, you are doing this because you have intense curiosity about people's stories. You're working out your own story, right? Mm-hmm. But then in doing so, you are helping other people get through their story, asking questions that may prompt them to go internal or seek help externally, whether it's meditation or talk therapy or just more walking in the woods. However that is, learning other people's paths always provokes some sort of, oh, I could do that or I did that.
Exactly. And I think too, to start knowing a person's journey, knowing a person's story, you really need to start from the beginning and childhood. So tell me a little bit about the young Anne-Marie, what it was like in your childhood, what it was like being raised, where you were raised, and just kind of start the story for me there.
Oh, good. That's always fascinating to figure out where your pathologies come from. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Lewis County, which is a very small area in Washington State. And my dad was the kind of town doctor. Mm-hmm. And we grew up very religious. So Seventh-day Adventist, which mm-hmm. you go to church on Saturday. Women cannot be ordained as ministers. You don't wear jewelry. You cannot dance. Seventh-day Adventist, though, as a very positive part are considered a blue zone, meaning when you look at the healthiest people in the entire world, they are one of the cohorts of the healthiest people because they don't eat meat, they don't smoke, they don't drink alcohol, there's no caffeine. Community is a giant part of their entire ecosystem. And so I grew up in a very kind of closed religious background with a lot of focus on community, good works, selflessness. And I really didn't thrive in a system of rules or an area that told me that I could not be who I wanted to be as a woman mm-hmm. just because of the gender that I was born. And so I went to a variety of schools. I kept getting asked to leave schools, not because of scholastic reasons, but because of behavioral reasons. I was mm-hmm. just didn't do like one of them had a rule that you couldn't hold hands or kiss a boy on school campus. And well, guess who got kicked out? So that type of thing. And I had a super kind of traumatic experience when I was about 12, where a man tried to kidnap me while I was jogging. And that experience led me to be the DARE spokesperson. And then I started interning in a police department. And I think in an attempt to take my power back, my first degree was in psychology, emphasis in criminal justice, and I became a corrections officer. So that's kind of the kind of origin story of how or why I ended up being so miserable at corrections that I had to take that entrepreneurial leap.
Right. And I think to fully understand you, it's really good to kind of start with that origin story. So what do you think success looked like for you when you were about to graduate college? You know, you're 17, you're 18. When you were looking around at successful people, what did success look like to you?
Well, at that point, I already felt like I was a failure because I had been raised to believe that I was going to be a doctor and take over my dad's practice. I was pre-med. Mm-hmm. I went to the same college he went to. I was asked to leave that college as well.
Yeah.
For breaking rules, not because of scholastics. I already wasn't going to Loma Linda University, which graduates 1/5 of America's doctors. Mm-hmm. And so I already thought that I was a disappointment and not achieving my potential by mm-hmm. being a correctional officer. So at the time, what success looked like to me was I was going to join the FBI. That was really what I was going to do. I was going to join the FBI. So I went to University of Washington. I thought that going to Washington, D.C., working my way up that federal ladder was really going to be success for me. That felt at the time right. Mm-hmm. And boy, what a turn I have taken, because now I work in creativity all day and I write the rules.
Right. So talk to me about the pivot, because I guess you had your own pivot, right, into becoming an entrepreneur. What made you take that leap?
What's really interesting is, even though I grew up in a pretty religious household, I grew up in a rural area, and not really a neighborhood. We were the only house really around for about 15 acres is what we had. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of creativity stuff. I learned how to knit. At the time, I learned how to sew. And so I'd always been really creative and mm-hmm. believed at the time, could not have identified my belief that creativity was essential. But that's how I acted. And so I started selling soap when I was about 14 at the local electrical store called Trevor's Electric. And I sold soap all throughout high school and college. And when I became a correctional officer, I realized that I really like people and I believe in the goodness of people and I believed in rehabilitation. And I realized that what I was doing wasn't actually making me happy. I was living with people's negativity, their stories, their family of origin stories, which were really tragic and awful every day. And I was coming home and making soap because it was such a creative, happy place for me. And when I became a correctional officer, I had a pivotal moment where someone, I was working at minimum security at this point, but they escaped, they got drugs, they came back, they got back into their room and they did their drugs. And by that point I was off shift and they had a very bad reaction. They went basically crazy. It was PCP, angel dust. And they broke all the glass they could find in the place and they smeared their blood all over the walls. And I wasn't on shift, but it was my fault. I felt responsible. And so I quit the next day, realizing that actually this was not the right fit for me. I love people. I love making stuff and I love teaching stuff and I love connecting. So I started selling soap. And I thought that was going to be like a 3-month gig. I thought I was going to get a real job. And within about 6 weeks of selling soap at farmers markets, I realized that, and craft shows, I realized that it was a really viable opportunity to make good money and that I actually could teach other women who did not love their jobs, who were not good at them, who it didn't fit with their family lives, to make soap and then sell soap, almost like a do-it-yourself, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I put $15,000 on a credit card. And I ordered my first order of supplies. I coded my very first website and brambleberry.com was off to the races and started, and I bootstrapped it from there. At the time, all I wanted to do was make $454 a month so I could pay my mortgage. And that was what success looked like to me after the pivot.
I read somewhere that you would sleep in your car at night and then get up the next day and sell products that you were making, right? And then go back again and then sleep in your car. And then this would just be a cycle for years on end. Where did you get that tenacity? And I know that you were doing it to pay your mortgage, but you were in your 20s. So the world was your oyster at the time. I'm sure there could have been other things that you were thinking of doing. Why were you doing that?
So you are correct. I did sleep in my car as many weekends because when you go to craft shows, the good ones are far and few in between, right? You're driving three or 4 hours, you're setting up your booth, you're selling all day, and then you go to sleep.
Right. So
if I stayed in a hotel room, all of my profits would be gone. And that is what I was using to support myself because Brambleberry was not giving me a salary. Mm-hmm. It didn't give me a salary probably for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but I knew there was something there. It was growing. The need was there. The need for a creative outlet and the need for other, primarily women, the need for them to have a really viable side hustle was always there. And I felt so passionate about teaching and so passionate about spreading this message that it was really easy for me to go make the money on the weekends, use that to pay my bills, pay my mortgage, keep me alive, and then work all week at Brambleberry, growing this business, helping people all over the nation. And, you know, back then, Google wasn't even a search engine when I started.
Right. At the time you were married, right? When you were doing all of this?
Yeah, I did. I had a starter marriage like you, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And I put him through school, helped him get his master's degree. And I got married very young, under the age of 20. And so I know that does work for some people, but I changed so much between that early kind of first decade. And the person I was when I got married was not the person I was when I got divorced.
Oh my God, are we twins? Because I feel like that's exactly what happened to me.
And it does work for some people. And for those people that find their soulmate early or find the person that they had spent whatever previous lifetimes together, however you want to believe it, mm-hmm. those people, wow, that's awesome. Yeah. But that wasn't my story.
And it sounds like relationships have been a bit a part of your life, because you talked about like in high school getting kicked out because of a boy.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think you've learned about yourself through relationships?
Well, there's this theory that you choose the people that you need in your life so that they can teach you, right? They can help you learn. They can help you heal your kind of woundings. And that's a theory. I don't actually know that it's been, quote, proven. But I will say that relationships have always been that kind of sharp edge that I push into that does give me the pain, that usually drives me to talk therapy or drives me to journaling or drives me to reading the self-help books to understand myself better and understand my motivations. Because we all have things in our life that we react to unconsciously and don't realize why we're having a strong reaction. Mm-hmm. But the more internal and introspective work that we can do, asking ourselves the question, journaling, talking to friends, talking to paid friends, right, therapists, mm-hmm. the less likely we are to have those reactions that are negative, that are outsized for what the situation is, and we can live a more peaceful, calm, even, steady life. And so those relationships that I've had, while many of them have been painful or have ended with me getting taken advantage of, they have taught me a lot about myself and how I want to show up in the world and who I want to run next to me. Mm-hmm. I do want to be in relationship. I do like being in relationship. I believe that 1 + 1 equals more than the sum of its parts if you're in the right relationship.
Yeah. How do you then, after you go through so many relationships, put yourself back together when you know that there might be pain involved here?
Mm. Well, so being in relationship and really being vulnerable and does invite pain. It gives the other person an opportunity to hurt you in a manner that no one can possibly hurt you, because mm-hmm. you have shown your kind of soft underbelly.
Yeah.
And so when I have to rebuild myself, which yes, has happened, and it's not just financially, I always go back to the Stephen Covey 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So go back to routine, go back to figuring out what your daily tasks need to be to get you to where you need to go. Because when your dream idea of this is who I am with a partner goes away, you go, okay, that didn't work. What do I actually want to create, and how do I want to create it? A great life happens by design.
Yeah. And I guess that leads me into 2 things that I'm thinking about that you were saying. Do you think that your positivity or your outlook comes from your habits?
Absolutely. So there's this concept that you're born with a happiness set point, right? You actually show up in the world and you are either a happy person or a not happy person. And I have 2 children. So I see that they both did come out differently. They both came out with different ways that they look at the world, and yeah, maybe happiness set points. But I believe that happiness is a choice, and that every single day you can choose to say, oh, I have to pay my bills. Or you can say, huh, I get to pay my bills. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And the actions are exactly the same, but your reaction is different. What you tell yourself is different. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that you can change your happiness at point. And I believe it's a matter of there are practices that are proven, right? A gratitude list. 5 gratitudes every day. Text it to your best friend. They text you back. I do this thing where I'll do 5 gratitudes every day and you can't repeat it in a 30-day period. So, you know, you get down to like really appreciating the present, because you are done with your health, your family, your car, your house, your job, right? You get done with those quick. And then you have to actually be thankful for tiny things on day 28, 29. Mm-hmm. There are things you can do to improve your happiness at that point.
So it sounds like you have a really good self-care practice, right? What is your self-care routine for yourself?
It's funny you ask, because I've dubbed this my year of wellness, because in the pandemic, I think probably like everybody else, everyone's routines got upended and mine was no different. I had two children at home homeschooling.
Yeah.
So my routines really changed a lot. And so this year I am getting back to my routine. So meditation every day, non-negotiable, 20 minutes of movement every day, non-negotiable. A glass of water every morning before I drink my coffee, non-negotiable. 4 30-day stints of absolutely no alcohol, non-negotiable. Time spent with family and friends that is meaningful. And so this could be anything from a hike to just game playing to having a meaningful conversation, but it is something more than just spending time together. It is trying to design peak moments. And then 6 weekend trips with my children that are different and meaningful. So anything from going to Whistler and teaching them how to ski, to going to the Van Gogh Live Interactive Seattle Museum, to taking them to meet their family in Norway that they've never met before. That's this year's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first got together with my partner years ago, we were talking on the phone and he said, well, where are you? Where are you going? And I said, oh, I'm on my way to the gym. And this was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And he said, I can't believe you're going to the gym. You have so much to do. And he did not say it in a kind manner. I felt like he was saying it in a judgmental manner. And like the CEO's number one job is to manage their own psychology. Number one. And that's not even my phrase. Ben Horowitz said that in his book, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things. And that is true. The CEO's job, the leader's job, and you are a leader, whether it's you're a leader of your household, a leader in your community, a leader in your department, you're a leader in some area. Your number one job is to manage your own psychology. And so that does mean the health practices, because life and business is a marathon and it's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so the self-care practices, they do come first. I will say no to the fun auction. I will say no to the one-on-one wine time with a girlfriend so that I can make sure I get that meditation in, so I can make sure I get that stretching in, so I can make sure I get that 20 minutes of movement in.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, listening to you and just hearing all of these different stories, your self-practice, everything so far, I feel like you exude confidence. And the name of this podcast is How I Got Through It. Can you take me back to a time where you just felt that you weren't going to make it through something, but you did?
When I feel like I can't get through something. So for example, divorce, I was deeply ashamed and embarrassed to be getting divorced. I made the wrong choice in the partner. Although, can I say I made the wrong choice, right? It got me to start my company, you know, all of that. But at the time, my parents were overseas. I was by myself. They didn't like my husband and they had never felt welcome in that life. And I felt like I just failed them and I failed myself. And I was facing financial devastation because I had to buy my own company from him, essentially, right? Washington's a community property state. So he got the house and he got all the belongings in it. I slept on friends' couches all that summer long because I didn't have a place to go. Mm-hmm. And I only wanted Brambleberry. That was all I wanted, was this lifeboat of a company that was me. I got through that time period by breaking down my daily tasks into such minute things that every task seemed manageable. You have to actually get up. You have to brush your teeth. You just have to get to the office. That's it. Just get to the office. Then you can stop. Mm-hmm. Then when I got to the office, I was deeply depressed. Like I felt like a failure and I was so embarrassed, just embarrassed. I'd had the big fairy tale wedding in a church, like the whole thing. And so how I got through that was breaking down into small tasks and then getting real about what I wanted for my best future, pulling out books, writing the plan. And at the age of 27, sleeping on a friend's couch, I wrote this list of things that I wanted by the time I was 40.
Yeah.
You know, how much I wanted to make, where I wanted to be living. And then I wrote a vision statement for myself that I use my positive forward-thinking creativity to inspire women to lead their best lives every single day. And I started to act as though that is what I was doing. And so then when I started feeling just a little bit better, then I broadened, you know, I started calling friends again. I started actually running outside again. I started doing those things, but it just got real about what I could actually do, which wasn't much.
Right.
And then my life got expansive and big again, and that felt good. But that is definitely, that is, I think, the hardest time that I have had to go through, because that embarrassment and that shame mm-hmm. was really big.
I feel like I'm in a similar intersection, actually, that you are talking about.
Yeah, embarrassment and shame, they're related. They're not the same, but they are related. And they make us feel bad, and they make us not show up.
It's a very it's a female centric problem, actually. I don't know that too much men walk around with that. And then, not to make it a male or female thing too, but I feel like women feel the guilt of leaving a thing, and the guilt is like pregame for shame and embarrassment.
Absolutely. You can spiral too. There's this thing where I read it, and it was, you ask yourself, is this real?
Yeah.
You know, is this situation that I'm making up in my head, is it real? Mm-hmm. And then you ask yourself again, is it real? And then you ask yourself again, is it real? Mm-hmm. And you ask yourself multiple times to see, actually, is what I am saying to myself, doing to myself, is that actually true? And it's usually never true. We are so, we can get in our heads, that monkey brain, which is where the meditation comes in, and the meditation helps so much. And I have an accountability buddy that's meditating with me. And so every time I get done with my meditations during the day, I text him and I'm like, hey, I meditated, just to get myself into that headspace of, actually, you are in control of your thoughts. The story I want to tell myself is that I am worthy of love, and I'm worthy of receiving love, and I'm worthy of a partner that sees me and wants to partner with me,
right,
with their own individuality and seeing my own individuality, right? What is the story I'm telling myself, and how do I change that narrative?
Yeah, because those types of situations can really take you on a whole tangent, and then you don't become the CEO of your life, right? Then you don't become the leader in your life. Your brain's running you, or fear is running you, or the fact that you're in like your mid 30s and you think, oh, time is running out or something, that's running you. My heart is in charge of me, not my actual brain that constantly whispers these things, because it's in fight or flight mode most of the time, right? It's just trying to survive.
Yeah, that's so true. And you're right. The limbic system, right? That little part in the back of our brain that says, is this good for me? Is this bad for me? Is this dangerous? Whatever. It reacts quickly.
Yeah.
And it's easy to let that get away.
Yeah. And to let that run you. It's like incredible. So I want to kind of pivot to Brambleberry and being an entrepreneur in the 90s, when it was not a popular thing for women to be doing at that time. I think it was like, what, 1998 for you?
Yeah, 98, 99. And, you know, interestingly enough, women are more entrepreneurial now. And I'm so thankful for that. But it's still a difficult thing for women to get funding. Like, if you look at the amount of funding that women get, it's just abysmally low. Women are entrepreneurs, but the statistics show that they tend to be entrepreneurs of not lifestyle brands because they want to be, but lifestyle brands because they end up sort of being forced. They're dual roles, right? They are the one that 80% of the housework and the childcare falls to, that type of thing.
Right.
And so being an entrepreneur in the 90s was really interesting, right? Brambleberry started at the same time that Amazon was losing 25 cents on every dollar of product they sold. Mm-hmm. So we started way back in the day, and I was able to code my first two websites. I was able to bootstrap. I'm still the sole owner of Brambleberry. We don't have any partners. I've never taken private equity money. And it's been a wild ride. Like, we're north of 20 million in revenue, and we have over 100 employees, and I love the management team that helps me run Brambleberry. I want to make it clear that there is a strong leadership team that does help balance the workload.
Yeah,
but it is definitely the wild ride to be a female at this level and try and have kids and a family and balance it all.
Yeah. But you know what? In that, though, you've got to really, I guess, be working on yourself and the faith in this business you have to have. And it seems like you've just had that since the days of the farmer's market, right? Is that something that comes easy to you? Were you born with that? Or is that something that's you're building brick by brick every single day?
I build it brick by brick. You do not wake up every single day thinking you can do anything that I try to do. It is a constant self-talk battle. Mm-hmm. And it's also coupled with rigorous planning. You have to do the work. One of the things that I am doing tonight, I'm talking to a coach to help me better define my marketing goals for 2023, because right now they're a little squishy, right? Okay, double down on influencers. How many influencers? What are you going to do? How does that work? So that is not a self-talk thing. That is literally sitting down and doing the work. That is the chore. That is the part that I don't love, right? I came in this weekend and I filmed myself making soap and I edited those and I tossed that up onto my Instagram stories just because that's the fun thing for me. Talking to you is the fun thing for me.
Yeah.
Doing the goal setting, talking to accountants about accounting, signing my W-9s, going through the reams and reams of legal paperwork I go through. That's the chore.
Yeah.
You have to balance the two. You have to do both. Mm-hmm. There, you don't get to, you know, what got you here will not get you there. So what got me here won't get me to the next level. So I always need to be learning because I don't know how to run the company I'm running right now. Like in the sense that like, I haven't done this before. Mm-hmm. I need to learn how to be the better leader for the current economy we're in. The recession plus inflation, plus the constant fear of COVID, plus China constantly shutting down. How do you run a company in that? I don't know. I haven't done it, but let me get better at being a human and being a leader so I can figure it out.
Yeah. Listening to you, right? Like, I feel like there's a couple of things that I think are just probably themes of your personality, I suppose, where like you have tremendous confidence and faith in yourself. But can you talk a little bit about leadership, being a female leader, being a CEO? Do you use the feminine side of yourself in leadership?
That's a great question. I am often the only girl in the room. It's pretty standard. And that's somewhat self-selective in the sense that like I try to get educational opportunities that are in areas that sometimes women don't play. So for example, when I went to MIT, there was 5 women in that classroom. Mm-hmm. The leadership skills that I've had to develop are around 1, finding my voice. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes scary to speak up when you are the one that doesn't look like everybody else. And 2, knowing when to be quiet. I have found that oftentimes when I am in a room full of men, that they need to hear themselves talk and they need to kind of really own their territory. And you know what? It doesn't matter what I say. They're not in a space to listen or hear.
Yeah.
So often I sit back and wait. And then usually my point has not been made or whatever. And so then I can step in after everyone's finally had a chance to talk. Mm-hmm. But being comfortable speaking and knowing that my opinions are as valid has been a real leadership opportunity of growth for me. Because, you know, sometimes it just feels like, oh my goodness, everybody else has done these amazing things. And I didn't raise $450 million for a fund. Mm-hmm. Can I speak to anything? Like I didn't take on private equity money. Do I deserve to be here? Do I belong here? Yeah. What did I do to get here? So finding my voice has definitely been a leadership journey for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably something that you're still going to continue to work on for like ever in every area of your life, right? When you think of things that move you in your life that are either current or that you're hoping that come to fruition, what does happiness look like for you?
Happiness for me is always the ability to feel joy every day. The ability to feel joy is really, that is freedom, right? When you feel joy, it's because you are not feeling encumbered by stuff you need to do. Mm-hmm. You're not feeling encumbered by people or debt.
Yeah.
You are feeling joy filled because you are present in whatever moment you are in. So whether that's looking at the sunset and literally just taking it in because you can, or if that's sitting in stillness or getting to take a bath, whatever it is, feeling joy mm-hmm. for me equals freedom. And so that is what happiness is for me. And the feeling joy isn't associated with necessarily a set of people. It's not necessarily associated with a set of actions. It is just the act of being present and being appreciative and going, oh my goodness, I feel so good right now, and acknowledging that. And so that is happiness. And I can do that anywhere. You think of Viktor Frankl and his book, Man's Search for Meaning, and how he found joy and meaning in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
That goes back to our minds being so powerful and how the words we speak to ourselves being so very powerful. So happiness is just the freedom and opportunity to feel joy every day.
Yeah. And the last question is, we have a new tradition on the show, and it's the through line that actually connects all of the guests. I have them choose a word for my next guest, and it really inspires the last question. So the word that they left for you is the word power. And I would like to know, how do you have power in relationships?
Power for me is a quiet place of stillness and knowing that I am enough. I will be enough no matter what is swirling around me, no matter who is coming at me with accusations or things that are just not true. The quietness of saying, no, I'm okay. I don't need to make a big point here. I don't need to answer that. We're good. And so for me, power is really a quiet stillness and a quiet grace in dealing with all situations.
Yeah, perfect. I think it's a great stopping point. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to share that we haven't covered?
If anybody's interested in learning more about Brambleberry, we're at Brambleberry on all the social. And then my personal is Come Make With Me, because I really do love to showcase creativity and in every area and aspect of my life and other people's lives. And so I'd love to get to know people who listen to this podcast more.
Awesome. And I'm sure they would love to get to know you. And I think they're going to totally enjoy this episode. I feel like we went a lot of different places, but a lot of places that people are feeling right now. Thank you so much. Thank you again for spending your time with me.
So fun and easy.
Have a great rest of the day.
Bye.
Bye.